So this is a project I worked on with Texas Children's Hospital. It started about 3 years ago, and we started putting together a forecaster. So today on the presentation, I wanted to talk about how to build your own. So I'm assuming here that some of you out here want to make your own forecaster. And we thought when we started this might be a hard thing to do. But it turned out parts of it that we thought were hard were not as hard as we thought they were, and other parts were quite a bit more work than we imagined. These are the steps I'm going to talk about today. Is to make your own forecaster, you need to design the model. And the model describes how you come to decision on your forecast. You have to write some software that takes the model and crunches the numbers. You've got to populate the metadata. And we talked a little about the metadata. It's the data that feeds into the model that makes the model intelligent and know about what's happening. Then you've got to integrate that final package into your software so it works. You're not done yet. You've got to identify test cases because see, does this thing work well? And you've got to test the forecaster. You've got to make changes, usually to your metadata or sometimes your software. And then you got to keep repeating steps 5 through 7, 8. And I have to tell you this, yeah, you keep doing that over and over again. So here's the kind of layout of how the whole team went. This wasn't what we knew when we first started. This is what we eventually came up with when we were probably about two-thirds of the way through. We finally had all these pieces in place. You've got the model up here at the top. That's the way I just talked about. You have to develop a model of how you're going to make these decisions. And your expert team and your technical team work together to create that model. From this model, the software team or the technical team puts together a piece of software that predicts it. And then the technical team and expert team work together on the metadata. And we used a spreadsheet. We put ours in an Excel spreadsheet when we first started. And I'll show you what that looks like in just a minute. And these two pieces of information came together to make what we call the forecaster. And you see the little blue arrows. This is because the blue arrows are what we did initially. And that process really didn't have to do it again. But the red arrows are the processes that we have to just do over and over again and continue to do. And so we see here we put this model and the software together. We made a forecast. And you see the metadata came and it hides inside the forecaster. And that makes the forecaster work. And you can see the thing here is the expert team met a lot. A lot. They met a lot. And they pulled information from the Pink Book, ACIP, the CDC, Immunization Action Coalition. I don't know who they all called. I can't say. But they would say, oh, we've got to call somebody. And they would be a couple weeks, and then they'd know the answer to it. All that forecaster was put together in a package and put inside our immunization system at Texas Children's Hospital. We have an internal immunization system separate from our electronic health record. So let me show you. It's got the whole thing laid out. So step one was design the model. So first thing you have to do is we got to break this problem into something we can solve. So we decided to break vaccines down into what we call antigens. So we weren't going to worry about pentacell or MMR or DTaP. We were just going to say, okay, we have a goal. We're trying to get diphtheria. We're trying to get a person immunized against mumps or diphtheria, and that's the goal. So what vaccines get us to that point? So MMR was seen in our system as measles, mumps, and rubella inside our system. This is not what the provider saw. We broke the schedule down into dose states that indicate which vaccine doses do next. Now, for computer programmers out there, states may mean something, but a state means a particular stage in a certain process, and I'll explain that in a little bit more here. And as the person receives a vaccination towards becoming immunized, they go through the steps. And so to kind of show what I mean by stages is imagine when you're a kid, you play Candyland, and you had to get from the beginning down here, and you had to get up to King Candy at the end, and you had to like spin a little dial, and you move in states. Well, imagine vaccination is kind of the same way. You're born, so you're not immunized. So you get your first dose, and you get your second dose, and you get your third dose, and now you're immunized. That's kind of how the forecaster works, is you've got these states you move through, and you've got to do certain things to get through them. So here's an example of MMR, which is pretty simple. This is a nice simple one. It wasn't the first one we started with, but it's a good example of how we do the states. We created two states, P1 and P2. So P1 is the state that you're in when you have not yet received the first dose of MMR. And this is a little bit hard for us to get our heads around because it's kind of a backwards thinking. But essentially what we're saying is when this little girl is at P1, it means she's been born, but she hasn't yet gotten P1. We need a forecaster due for her first dose. When she gets her first dose, then she's supposed to slide over to here and go to P2. At that point, she has gotten her first dose. She's now expecting her second dose. And then when she gets her second dose, then she slides over and she's complete. And this is what I mean by states. The state is this is first state, the second state, the third state. And that was the basic model we came up with. When we came up with this model, we suddenly realized, aha, we can take all of the immunization schedules and we can break them down into these states. Now, this one's fairly simple, but if we actually go to this one, this is PCV7 as it was in 2009. A little more complex. Just so you can get an idea, the P1, P2, P3 is the primary series. We call them that. So primary 1, primary dose 2, primary dose 3, primary 4, which is the booster. But if you were late, let's say you came in at, say you were actually 2.5 years old. Well, you would be just between 24 and 59 months. You were transitioned to complete. You only needed one dose and you were done. If you came in if you were, let's say, 12 months old, you came in for your first dose, you'd actually be transitioned to what we call R2, which is a secondary schedule, and it's a three-dose schedule. So you go to R2, and then you're supposed to go to your booster. And so you can kind of see how this breaks down the vaccination schedule into very small individual states. Once we did that, then we went through and we took these diagrams and we put them into an Excel spreadsheet. We picked Excel because it was easy for us to work with, it was easy for the technical staff to look at, and it was easy for the expert team to look at. And we used that as our media point to put stuff into it. We probably, if we had more time and more, we probably put it into a nicer looking system, but Excel was what we did. And this is an example of the MMR. You can see this P1 state was put down here and we labeled it as P1. We said in here the age of the patient had to be 1 year in order to be valid. So you can see how this rule, it was translated into this table. And these tables are going to be used by the model that we're going to create to make the decision about where the patient's at. So the patient's born, and we look at it, and we say, when can they first get their first MMR shot, or measles, or mumps, or rubella? What we say is, we say, oh, okay, they're 1 year of age, we'll add 1 year to their age, and that's the valid date. And that's where the program would pull it from, is this table. So the next step was to write the software. So we created the core forecasting software. This didn't take too long. I wrote this stuff. The basic piece of it didn't take that long. It's about 900 lines of code. It's like a 12-page paper or 20-page paper. It's not that much code. There's more supporting software on top of it, but the core forecaster is actually a pretty simple process. If you're going to build your own, you need support. I identified three areas that you need to support. One is forecast recommendation report. You need to create that report that the provider sees. It needs to support that. It should support reminder recall activities, such as this person's overdue. And it should also support vaccination rate assessments, such as did we miss a dose while we were in the process of vaccinating with some other doses. The forecast should also evaluate vaccines given as invalid or valid. And that's part of the evaluation piece that we talked about, is two pieces evaluating forecasting. It should be able to evaluate the shots. So if there's six DTaps and one of them's invalid, we'll still think that they need to get another dose, or five DTaps if one's invalid. It also set dates for the next vaccine when it's due, and it'll identify missed opportunities. And this is now when we got done with that, we were able to create the raw forecast output. And I gave in a pretty form of this. This is not what the physician would see. This is the raw data that came out of the forecaster. And a couple things you notice about it. We've got, let's go to measles, because that's what we were talking about. So measles is right here on this line. It's telling me that the first dose is due. There's a valid date, a due date, an overdue date, and a finish date. Now, this is not ready for the provider, because what we would do for the provider is, if you look at measles, mumps, or rubella, you notice the recommendations are exactly the same. And that's because they have the same schedule. We would actually, for the provider, we end up combining those into an MMR. But in this case, they're separate because this is the raw output. In addition, you'll see this column that says finished. If you see right here, rotavirus is finished in 1998. That's because at this point, we don't expect them to get rotavirus anymore, because if they haven't gotten it by now, we're not giving it to them anymore. And so this row right here would drop off the final report. But this is what the forecaster came up with and said, okay, they should have, in 11/21, 1997, they should have gotten their first dose of rotavirus. That's when they should have gotten. And then we have some explanation over here on the slide that tells you about how it came to that decision. Okay, so the next step was to go through and finish populating all the metadata. So we got the whole system working, but now we've got to put in all the data to tell it how the MMR works, the DTaP works, Prevnar works, all the vaccines we go through. This turned to be a lot more work than I thought. I thought, hey, I'm a technical guy. I'll make the whole thing work. I'll give them the Excel spreadsheets. They'll just fill them in one weekend or 1 week, and we'll be ready to go. This process took over a year to complete. So we first thing I do is we had to train the expert team on the model. So the experts, they know how the vaccine, they know the recommendations very well. We say, here's how the model works, and they're like, huh? But they get it one day, and then it's like the next day is like, now how does that work again? And because you have to think like a computer. So the expert team had to think a lot like a computer, a lot more than they wanted to think like. Now for the technical team, that was me. I ended up having to think a lot more about immunizations than I wanted to think about. I thought, okay, I made the model, it works, you just put the numbers in, it'll work for you. And I had to get into it a lot more than I wanted to. So, and of course, we have here the expert team. There's these a pink book, ACIP, CDC, Immunization Action Coalition. That's who they should be consulting. And you should definitely expect a long process on this. This is the part that's a long process. And it's a process that gets you have to repeat again in the future. Hopefully not as long. Now that you've got all the tables populated, now you want to put the whole thing together into something that's working. So this is it. This is it working right here. We have a test system, and we have an immunization information system. And when you think immunization information system, think of like a registry. So the test system here is where we tested that. We always like to test it before we actually put it in our main system. We had a lot of test tools along with it to see if it was working and behaving properly. And so you take your core forecaster and metadata, and you pull it into your immunization information system. Then we pull data from the database, and we would send it to our, we would forecast for it, and then we send it to our post-processing. There's always this post-processing piece. The post-processing is the final cleanup before you show it to the physician. And we do things, for instance, we change descriptions. Our forecaster goes through and does diphtheria tetanus forecast, and we decide whether to say it's DTaP or TD, depending on how old the patient is. But that's a post-forecaster process. We also combine things and drop things off the list that are not important for them to see. And so you can see this is an example of a patient who has nothing due of this day based on that post-processing. But you're not done yet, because you think you're done, but now we have to test it to see if it works. So to do that, you have to assemble test cases. And in our case, we were really lucky. Michigan sent to us their test cases that they worked with that they had gotten from Connecticut, so we started there. And a test case has to have the patient date of birth, the vaccination history, the contraindications if applicable, and the expected results. And that's a lot of time we spent was going through and trying to figure out what do we expect the results to be. We also had to consider rotavirus and PCV, because the problem with rotavirus, as you see in my forecaster, it drops off your forecaster. It says they're 5 years old, we don't care anymore. So our test cases would get old. There's two ways you can deal with this. One is that you can set up test cases that are relative, and we didn't do that. We use age-specific tests. And so because of that, we had to every year we have to go through with these case with the rotavirus ones, and we have to make the patient 1 year younger and make all his tests 1 year younger, and then we have to make sure everything works still, and we have to make our tests again. But it works. And then we had to create a testing system. So this testing system had to create the forecast recommendation, provide a forecast result explanation of why it was doing what it was doing, and then compare the expected with the actual. So our expert team had to come up with an expected value, and then we had to compare it with our actuals and see how those two compare to each other. And the system also had to track a pass-fail status. And that pass-fail status was not automatically generated. It's set there by the person who's running it. And it has to have space for notes and comments, and it has to support something we call regression testing. Regression testing is, we just did this because we had some changes that came out of the MMRW that we had to put in place. I make the changes. I'm busy with lots of other projects, so I make these changes easy to make. I'm just making the metadata. We talked about them. But the question you have is, before you commit those changes and put them out there, is, did I break anything that's working right now? And that's what you need a system for, is to go through and go say, let's go through our 150, 200 tests, and let's make sure they're all happy still. And you go through and make sure that's called regression testing. And it'll make you sleep well at night if you have regression testing. So here's a picture of our forecast test system. We wrote this about two-thirds way through the process because we just couldn't figure out how else to do this. It's not real pretty, but it works. And so if you're going to build your own forecaster, I'd recommend that you had something like this. We have a list. This is HPV, an example of our HPV tests. Again, these are ones that we received from collaborating with Michigan. And this is a test. We have a test name and a test status and a description. The test status is our expert team saying this test passed. And so let me show you how that looks. When you click on one of those tests, this is just the first HPV test. It gives you a description. It gives you a patient name, not a real patient name. It gives them date of birth, and it's currently as a pass. The expert user can say if it's pass or fail. And down here is the vaccination. So this one's received one vaccination, HPV quadrivalent. And this one is actually, she was born 10/10/1997, and 10/05/2007. She was 5 days shy of her 9th birthday. So according to our rules, she should not have gotten a Gardasil at this point. She should not have been. So what we're going to test is we're going to see on our forecast what we do. What we are expecting, the expert team says, hey, she's due for her first dose. And these are the dates when she should get it. Her valid date is 11/02/2006. The date when she should be due for is 10/10/2008, which should be her... Let's see, that would be her 11th birthday, it looks like. So she's 11 years old, we're saying she's due for it. And she's overdue 10/10/2010, so 2 years later on her 13th birthday. And the TCH actually right now is exactly the same, and they're colored the same color, so it's easy to identify they're the same. That's good. That's where it's at right now. But if you look at the notes that we wrote, Laura King wrote a note that when last year in June, she said change test status to fail. That was initial status was fail. So this score over here, the actual value, is actually different. And then she, down here, she changed expected results. She set the expected result. And then in between these two notes, I made changes to the metadata and fixed it. And then Laura said, passed, after changes made to Forecaster HPV tables, and then she changed the test status to pass. And so now we recorded this pass. And this is a critical system for keeping on top of the changes that are going on and keeping yourself sane with all of the test cases. So this is the process. You make changes. You create new test cases as needed. When we came out with new MMRW changes, we made new test cases. We said, here's a test case that captures that concept. We put it in our testing system, and it failed, which is exactly what we expected. And then we went through the process of fixing it in the metadata, or sometimes you have to fix it in our forecaster, but the forecaster usually doesn't change very much. It's the metadata that you're fixing. And then we deploy the changes in the testing system, and then we verify that it's fixed. We verified that one problem was fixed, and we verified we didn't mess anything else up in the process. And then we deploy that to the IIS. And then, of course, the last step in this is lather, rinse, repeat. So just keep doing this over and over again. I also wanted to say real quickly that we went a further step to actually integrate it with our electronic health record in the hospital. There's no standard way to integrate this. This is one of the issues we'll talk about in a minute, is that there's no standard way of integrating a forecaster in. A lot of people think, oh, if I just buy a forecaster, I'll just integrate with my EHR. It isn't that standard. We looked at four different ways. We looked at integrating it directly into the software. We looked at creating a web service that we could send it in through a web service that's a little bit more disengaged from the software. We looked at creating an HL7 query interface because the software we had could query an immunization registry. We looked at doing that. And we looked at creating a simple web link inside the EHR where we could just click on a link and it would just pull up a web page that would show the forecast in a separate web page. We actually ended up going with the last link, at least initially, because of the complexities of the other ones. But we'll probably be moving to some of these other options in the future. And so the lessons learned about doing this process is that, of course, creating the algorithm itself is relatively simple. I guess if we probably thought of the whole process, maybe we would have thought more about it. But when I thought, hey, this is pretty simple to do, we got started. But creating the metadata and maintenance of the metadata is a much bigger effort. In fact, another project I'm working on where they have a forecaster, people are retiring and saying, I'm not even going to support it anymore in my retirement because it's so much work just to keep up on it. Another problem is that the technical advantage from ACIP covers expected scenarios. A lot of scenarios we went to the ACIP were scenarios that you don't really expect to see, but the forecaster needs to be able to do. And so it doesn't cover. We don't get guidance on all this stuff. You've got to develop a consistent process to deal with the rules. So if there's ways that you can do the rules in slightly different ways, you need to consistently decide this is the whole way we're going to always do this rule. Like if you're going to do a month or 4 weeks, just pick. We picked 4 weeks to always use 4 weeks in almost every recommendation if we had a choice between months and weeks. Some recommendations were difficult to operationalize. And it's really important to have a robust testing system, which I showed you quite well. And this is the last slide that I want to talk about is what we need, because there's several things that we could do to support us better. One is we'd like some national export forecast guidance to help translate the recommendations into computer algorithms, which is exactly what Stuart's been talking about. So that's right down the line. We would also like to see some kind of national forecast test case repository. We'd like to be able to share test cases because I think we've got a list, but we'd like to have other ones around and see what other people have done so that we can see what we do. And we'd like some more collaboration, be able to share more of the lessons that we've learned for what we've done. And another, this is a really big wish list, but we wish there was a common web service interface for our forecaster. That would really, really help us. But I know that's a pretty big wish list, so... and I'd just like to thank the expert team, Layla Sani, Laura King, Rachel Cunningham, and Julie Boom. And thank you all for listening, and hopefully you'll have fun with your forecasters and working with them. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me or the TCH team. So.